This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, lovely to have you company for Talking Horses this week as the carnival starts to wind down for 2019. Sandown Guineas Day and Zipping Classic Day yesterday, and we saw some wonderful performance in particular from southern France, the expensive import, now raced by Australian Connections, winning the feature yesterday in what was a very impressive performance. It's now possible he'll go back onto the international stage, if not stay in Australia, for the Ornum Carnival next year. On this week's show, we're going to catch up with Seamus Mills, who has just returned from a trip to the US. Looking forward to hearing all of his insights. Emma Morrell from Marcus Oldham College about their horse scholarship, which is a very valuable tool for people wanting to pursue careers in the horse industry. Clint Donovan from the Magic Millions, they launched their catalogue for their big sale on the Gold Coast in January. This week we'll run through some of the likely highlights there with Clint. And Rod Lyons, who is one of the part owners of the Top Sprinter Nature Strip, is a special guest with us this morning. He's going to share the backstory of Nature Strip and some of the likely plans with their sprinter going into next year. But our first guest this morning is from New Zealand Bloodstock, Danny Ralston, ahead of the important Ready to Race 2-year-old sale coming up this week.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Our first guest on Talking Horses this morning is New Zealand Bloodstock's Danny Ralston. How are you, Danny?
Good, thanks, Joe. How are you going?
Good. Counting down, of course, to the ready-to-run sale of two-year-olds, which is coming up in only a few days.
Yep, we kick off at 11 o'clock on Wednesday and Thursday this week.
And it's been a sale that's produced a lot of very good horses, including 19 Group 1 wins.
Yeah, it's a sale that's really grown over the last particularly 10 years. And, we're really proud of the graduates that have come out of the sale. And some of those now have even gone on to stud some Group 1 winners that have raced successfully in the Southern Hemisphere that are now stud in New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah, and more recently we've seen some graduates of this sale win decent races.
Yeah, for sure. It's always been a sale that's been very popular in Southeast Asia, and we saw the Singapore Gold Cup the other night go to a graduate, Mr. Clint, and beat the clock by Hinchinbrook, who's been a great sprinter up there in Hong Kong, contest another group race there tonight, actually.
Yeah, right. And so how does the catalogue look for this year's sale, Danny?
Yeah, really, really good. Again, we've got just over 400 horses. It took under 400 breezed up after withdrawals, and that sire list is looking really good. Obviously, Brazen Bow has had a good spring, but those successful Australian stallions at the moment are all represented. Dundeel, Piero, Hinchinbrook, Zoustar, etc. And of course, our strong Kiwi stallions at the moment, Savabeel, Ocean Park, and Reliable Man, all had good carnival there in Melbourne with you. And then the old stalwarts, Pins, and Darcy Brahma and Purin Canto, etc. So, we've certainly got good depth in the sire index, and that's really translated to the horses we've seen out on the pre-farm inspections.
Mm. And some very good judges now get behind this sale by purchasing horses, but also endorsing it. Phil Cataldo, of course, a Bloodstock agent, one of those people who sourced two Group 1 New Zealand Derby winners from this sale.
Yeah, Phil's been out with us on parades, and he loves the sale. He's had a great record out of it. And so also is David Ellis. He's never been as big a buyer out of this sale as he has been out of the Yelling sale, but he's managed to find a few top horses, including Tiaki Ashark, out of the sale. So it's been a happy hunting ground for some of our good local agents, and even those from sort of further afield are quite confident that they'll be looking for their next good horse. Matthew Elton and Simon Zara have had a great record out of the sale, and Bill Mitchell picking up Beat the Clock a couple of years ago. So it appeals to some pretty serious yearling and two-year-old buyers. Mm.
And what is the buying bench looking like this year?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. We've been canvassing pretty far and wide, and Hong Kong is obviously a little bit of a concern with the happenings up there socially at the moment. But on our recent canvas there, there's still some good, strong support from the Hong Kong market and the trainers, and Singapore, Macau, Malaysia, Korea, and of course your homeland, where we're looking to host as many Australians as we can.
Mm. Interesting you touched on the Hong Kong situation. Obviously, there was a race meeting there, the second one so far, that was cancelled due to the outrage going on there. The impact of this on racing is really starting to be felt, isn't it?
Yeah, it sort of didn't really impact immediately, but I spent a fair bit of time up there, and the feedback I got was certainly not that people aren't coming to the show or aren't spending, but at some point that's going to have a significant effect on the economy and the share market, and we'll see it starting to impact on discretionary spend on horses.
Yeah, sad situation, isn't
it? It is, yeah. It's a beautiful part of the world and important to both Australia and New Zealand and the racing industry.
Mm. And what about Australian buyers that you'll be able to lure across for the sale this year? Has there been a pretty strong interest from particularly Victorian trainers?
Yeah, Melbourne's been good. You know, the buying bench was traditionally Southeast Asia and only a little bit of Australia in the past, but I think the prize money that you guys have on offer and the success of particularly the graduates out of this sale, but also the New Zealand breeds over the carnival have really lifted interest from Australia and quite a number of the, as you allude to, the leading Melbourne trainers will be coming over to the sale, and even some of them are sticking around a little bit longer or coming a day or two earlier and doing a few yearling inspections for Cracker in January as well. So we look forward to hosting all of those.
Traditionally, there's been a bit of a stigma, I guess, attached to these types of sales, Danny, a bit of speculation and reluctance from the hardened horse people about the credibility of these types of sales. But now that we're seeing so many good graduates come out, there's no denying that they're a worthwhile sale to at least consider, let alone invest in, would you say?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the quality of both the horse and the races that they're winning, we've seen Caulfield Cup winners, we've seen VRC Derby winners, Rosehill Guineas winners. So we're not producing the quick, cheap speed turnaround out of a two-year-old sale that used to be the perception. It's really our honour roll is really predominantly made up of classic winners. So I think that myth has been well and truly debunked, and we go a long way towards supporting the integrity with multiple options for blood tests, both from Breeze Up Day and also from the sale day, which is just to counteract the rules around the steroids and maybe any painkillers and things like that. So we see that as a deterrent as much as a safeguard. And we're really proud of the integrity of the sale, and we're always looking for ways to further reinforce that issue.
Mm. How are things looking as far as your premier yearling sale goes in January?
We couldn't have had a better spring, Joe. Ocean Park just had a massive week both in Sydney and Melbourne, and Savabeel managed to still get his couple of stakes winners over the carnival, and Reliable Man getting that Australian Group 1 was so important. So, the Kiwis are back, and we've got some really, really exciting first season size, which you've probably seen us as it's featured pretty heavily in our promotions over the last few months, and we've been pressing the flesh a lot in Australia, both metropolitan and provincial, and we're really confident that we've got the stock again, and we're back.
Mm. Danny, lovely to catch up with you on the program this morning. Good luck for the upcoming ready-to-run sale of two-year-olds. Look forward to seeing how the results play out.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe.
This podcast is brought to you by rsn.net.au.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
Racing on the hillside at Sandown yesterday, and we opened the program there with the listed Merson Cooper Stakes over 1,000 metres. It was won by Hanseatic, a two-year-old colt by Street Boss out of an Exceed and Excel mare, Itamiri. Hanseatic is related to a winner, Skagerrak. The listed Sandown Cup was race two on the program, over 3,200 metres, won by Azuro, a six-year-old gelding by My Boy Charlie, out of an Okawango mare, Anthropology. The listed Twilight Glow Stakes over 1,400 metres was won by Zilong, a three-year-old daughter of Deep Field, out of a Testa Rossimere Pain in the Glass. Zilong is related to winners Piero Bell and Rumours and was purchased for $360,000 at the 2018 English Australian Easter Yearling Sale. The Group 3 Sandown Stakes over 1,500 metres was won by Gold Fields. Now a seven-year-old gelding by Churchill Downs out of an Costa del Lago Mare Gold Delta. Gold Fields is related to winners Delta Dior, Gold for Kev and Rakitiki and was purchased for just $42,000 at the 2014 edition of the English Phobos Gold Yearling Sale. The listed Doveton Stakes over 1,000 metres won impressively by Godolphin's Viridine, a five-year-old gelding by Poet's Voice out of an Anabar Mare Patina. Viridine is related to winners Coach, Copper and St Edward's Crown. The Group 3 Kevin Heffernan Stakes over 1,300 metres, that was won by Teleplay, a five-year-old mare by Written Tycoon out of a Redoute's Choice Mare Special Episode. Teleplay is related to winner Special Girls and was bought for $85,000 at the 2016 English Premier Yearling Sale. The Group 2 Sandown Guineas over 1,600 metres won by Pretty Brazen, a three-year-old filly by Brazen Bow out of an Costa del Lago mare Pretty Penny. Pretty Brazen is related to a stack of winners, Clifton Red, Dollar for Dollar, Fortune of War, I Am Titanium, Resilient and Sertorious. And they paid a bit of money for it, $700,000 at the 2018 English Australian Easter Yearling Sale. The Group 2 Zipping Classic over 2,400 metres won impressively by Southern France. He's a five-year-old entire by Galileo out of an Anabar mare, Alta Anna. The Group 3 Summon Stakes over 1,500 metres won by Richard Lamming's Jamaican Rain, a seven-year-old mare by Manhattan Rain out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Hariz. Jamaican Rain is related to winners Delago, Hariz and Diasonic. And they bought Jamaican Rain for $90,000 at the 2014 Magic Millions Gold Coast Yearling Sales. And race 10 on a big card at Sandown yesterday was the Eclipse Stakes at Group 3 over 1,800 metres. Won by Pacodali, a seven-year-old gelding by Parco Boy out of a Dansilly mare, Don't Dilly Dally.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
Past the 400, Pretty Brazen takes the lead with Banquo, and they were followed by Conqueror, who's lifting down the outside. It's Banquo and Pretty Brazen. Pretty Brazen puts up three quarters, Banquo and Conqueror. Pretty Brazen drives away at the 100, about three quarters, Banquo. Conqueror coming again, and Heart of Poissons back to the inner. Pretty Brazen's holding on, gripping on, and won the guinea.
Pretty Brazen, yesterday's Group 2 Sandown Guineas winner, was an expensive purchase. They paid $700,000 for her, and she yesterday became the seventh consecutive stakes performer and third stakes winner for the remarkable broodmare Pretty Penny. Pretty Brazen, in earning her first stakes success, advanced her record to four wins and a second placing from just 10 starts. The Tony and Calvin McAvoy trained filly will now be spelled and set for what looks like a very promising autumn campaign. Pretty Brazen was purchased out of the Coolmore Stud Draft for $700,000 by McAvoy Mitchell Racing on behalf of Linda Huddy's Peachester Lodge at the 2018 English Australian Easter Yearling Sales. She's the seventh foal of the talented Costa del Lago mare Pretty Penny, who earned black type when third in the Group 3 Cockram Stakes. Pretty Penny is now rising 16 and was consigned to the 2016 Magic Millions National Broodmare Sales, with Colm Santry Bloodstock having the final say at $570,000 on behalf of Dr. Dennis and Claire O'Brien of Clairdon Racing. She was carrying Pretty Brazen at the time of her sale. Pretty Penny has a yearling filly by the Triple Crown winner American Pharaoh and is due to foal to him again this season. Pretty Brazen becomes the sixth stakes winner for Darley Studs' Brazen Bow, who is covering at Northwood Park this season at a fee of $49,500.
Now on Talking Horses, Insider Insights.
Good morning, Seamus, and welcome back to Australia. How was your trip to the US?
Yeah, really interesting, Joe. I've been going for a few years now, and it's always an interesting trip. The American horse is such a sort of different horse to the Australian horse that it's always interesting to get over there and see what the locals like and what's hot at the time.
And what sort of stock did you come away with?
I got four nice mares, three stakes horses, and just a well-related Union Rags. There's a few stallions I like over there. I've got a stakes place, Medaglia D'Oro filly, a stakes-winning Quality Road filly. Union Rags is a sire I particularly like, and managed to get a daughter of his. So not big in numbers, but bought four home. Not big in numbers, but very happy with the quality.
Mm. And obviously for Australian buyers.
Yeah, for Australian buyers, a couple of New South Wales Hunter Farms. So I'll head up there. But, it's really interesting always going to see their stock. You know, they're a different style of horse, the American dirt horse to the Australian turf horse. It's, from a bloodstock point of view, probably the most interesting thing for me is just how different physically they've evolved through years and years of breeding.
Yeah. For our listeners and me, what would you say are the differences that stand out as far as dirt versus turf horses go when you cast an eye over them?
Well, in all honesty, they look like a different breed. They ideally for Americans, 16.3 is the perfect size. Certainly from as far as my buyers go in Australia, they like 15.3s. 16 hands, sort of topping out at 16.1. So their size in the first place is a major difference. And then physically, the way the American turf horses evolve, they're straighter through the hocks, straighter through the shoulder, which makes them sort of straighter through the pasterns as well. And they are a taller, skinnier, scopier style of horse. So they're narrower through the chest, and longer than our horses, bigger than our, taller than our horses, and pretty much straighter as far as their angles go.
Mm. So how does that then affect their suitability for potential racing here in Australia on turf?
Oh, look, I think that's the reason why you need to be on the ground over there because, once again, from a bloodstock point of view, you're very much looking to buy and breed type. And the American Eye, I was quoted a filly over there by Medaglia D'Oro, great pedigree and so on, and they thought she was the absolute perfect physical. And then when I went to see her, I didn't think she'd suit Australia at all. And so that's, from a bloodstock point of view and from an agent point of view, that's the main reason for being on the ground is just because what they ideally want to see is not really what ideally we want to see. So you have to, your strike rate lessens in that regard, as in you find less horses of suitable type, but when you do, you can find some, really interesting pedigrees. And I do think the American pedigrees work very well with the Australian speed sires when you find that right physical.
And what's the vibe on American racing in general at the moment, do you think, over there?
It's really interesting. I've been going there for quite a while and become friendly with, a large number of people over there and so on. It's interesting. They're very much facing a lot of the issues we are, which is, my own way of putting it would be to sort of, drag racing into the modern era as far as community standards and so on go. So they're definitely facing, the Santa Anita or the problems with the Santa Anita track and the amount of horses who have injured themselves on that Santa Anita track is probably cast it brought it into the spotlight, particularly in California, which is quite a progressive sort of forward-thinking state as far as America goes. I would say, much like here, there are differing opinions that there's not a problem as such, and it's been the same as it's always been, and the community attitude. Is really just, I suppose, a changing landscape. And then there are other people who do really think that there are parts of racing and so on that need to change to meet those changing community standards.
And was there much perspective shared back on Australian racing whilst you were there from the American racing people?
Yeah, look, I would say from a large point of view, the Australian racing is a very well respected product. I would say over the years that I've been going there, more people know about it, more people are interested in it, more people have invested in it, more people are interested in it. I think to some extent the difficulty for American racing hanging on to their part of the overall product with huge expenditure on NFL and, you know, NBA and so on. I think the sport over there has struggled for that mainstream. Their biggest issue seems to be outside welfare and so on would be, you know, the number of people coming into the sport. And I think that they are sort of suffering that pointy end of the lack of new investment or new interest with the other sports available. So they do, a lot of people there do see Australia as not a promised land, but certainly as a culture that is relatively similar and a product that is quite vibrant. So I think we've seen a lot of American investment already so far here, and I think that'll continue.
Well, that's very encouraging to hear. And what's your take on the issues that Australian racing are facing at the moment? It seems to me that on the welfare side of things, it's gone a little bit quiet.
Look, I would like to see some, you know, I see WA has put out a statement in the last, you know, in the last little bit, the last few days, with a few programs. Look, I'm still firmly of the belief that all of this needs to come from the top, that Racing Australia needs to adopt a national-wide approach, which, you know, all the PRAs sign up to. I still just believe that, okay, it's nice for individuals or even, for states or communities to or stud farms, et cetera, to decide to do their bit, and so they should, because I think, you know, the issue needs to be faced by everybody in the industry, but I do think the directives need to come from the top. I guess with a few key resignations of recent times, maybe that will have stalled the ability to sort of move on in that regard. But yeah, from someone at the coalface trying to sell the product to the everyday person in the street, it's been interesting just through the Melbourne Cup Carnival and afterwards having tasted a little bit of success to get people's, you know, feedback on what they, and I've had quite a bit of feedback sort of on what people have made of the whole issue during the carnival, which is obviously they've faced a lot of media from both sides, you know, so I guess they've got both sides of that, of the coin or both sides of the argument. But yeah, I'm just firmly of the belief that sooner rather than later, if Racing Australia doesn't hand out a national directive, I think the issue will not only continue, it'll get worse.
Tend to agree with you there, Seamus. And on racing yesterday at Sandown, we saw the Melbourne Spring Carnival come to a bit of a conclusion. Southern France couldn't have been more impressive, winning the Zipping Classic.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, he's beautifully bred, son of Galileo, Avenana Barmere. Came over here with huge raps, and obviously the form had sort of been frank through Downdraft, who he beat in the Irish St. Ledger trial, and Master of Reality was in that race too. So, I think he, along with a lot of horses in the race, probably suffered from the slow pace that the Melbourne Cup was run on. He obviously yesterday with a bit more genuine speed, he sort of showed what he could do. He was sort of right up there in people's thoughts as far as the Melbourne Cup goes. But yesterday, I guess he showed that, 2020 might be his year. He's certainly, he's only won over 2,800 so far, but he ran out the trip, you know, really well yesterday. And I guess that would make connections, relatively buoyant about their prospects going forward.
Be interesting to see where they place the horse from here and whether, in fact, they go back overseas with him, which is very much a likelihood.
Yeah, look, I think, that's the beauty of some of these, genuinely class stayers coming and so on. And where they can go. I mean, even with like a horse like the winner, your options in the autumn are limited to an extent. Obviously, Sydney Cup, and you consider Queen Elizabeth and so on as over the slightly less trip. But yeah, perhaps that's an interesting or going to be an interesting offshoot from the number of people buying overseas horses will be. Whether the programming here will allow them a few more options in the autumn.
Mm. And Goldfields, what a great win that was for Stephen Bassett, and a way to bow out from his fantastic racing career in Victoria.
Yeah, outstanding. Look, I don't think there'd be a more liked individual in the entire industry than Stephen Bassett. So I think that every person on course and probably every person watching the race would have put in a little fist pump or a little cheer for Steve to get home on Goldfields.
Mm. And a lovely horse too he is.
Yeah, he is. 7-year-old by Churchill Downs, and I hope that it's not out of school to say every stallion gets one, and Churchill Downs has got his.
Yeah, he has. And there's a potential they might campaign that horse overseas. They were talking about Dubai, an invitation there.
Yeah, look, I think the thing about Dubai, which might have been lost, is, a few years ago, Tony Noonan took some horses over there and had a lot of success. Obviously not at the very top level, but there is a huge undercard program through March that's great prize money. Good racing, obviously the facilities are, as good as anything in the world. I thought when Tony took some horses over there with such success, it may open a little bit of a door. I know Mick Kent's explored the idea of taking a filly over for the Oaks over there, and I thought it would sort of start a little bit of a trend, but seems to have been forgotten about. So it was interesting to hear that's a potential plan.
Mm. Seamus, thanks for joining us as always on Talking Horses this morning. Great to have you back in Australia, and enjoy your week. We'll look forward to catching up with you next Sunday.
Welcome, Joe.
Marcus Oldham College has announced 3 new scholarships in equine management to help open up exciting career pathways for graduates over a cross-section of equine industries. Marcus Oldham's Diploma of Equine Management is a 1-year course internationally recognised by major sectors of the horse industry, and it aims to equip students with the practical husbandry and business skills that are necessary for a successful career in the equine industry, and we applaud that on Talking Horses. It's a fantastic initiative that's been going for quite some time. Emma Morrell from Marcus Oldham joining us on the program this morning. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thank you, Jo.
And you're at the Adelaide International 3-day event at the moment.
Yes, that's right. We've got a stand there for people to come and visit and have a chat to us about the course. So it's great, and they also get to watch the event. So it's a win-win situation.
And as always, we've seen some fantastic horse sport there, all the top Australian riders competing.
Yeah, it's been exciting, and some New Zealand riders too, so it really is international.
Yeah, we don't talk about the Kiwis, though.
They're doing quite well, so.
yeah. And have the crowds been good there and general attendance?
Yeah, it's actually been really good, and the weather's been perfect this year. Sometimes it's, high 30s, but it's been perfect competition weather for the horses. It's really been lovely, and, yeah, the crowds are really great.
Mm. And it's a great opportunity for you to promote these scholarships, which, as I said at the top of our interview, is a fantastic initiative for the equine and racing industry.
Yeah, that's right. We're really lucky. We've always had some good scholarships, but this year we've been given a few more from our sponsors, which is great. So we've got 5 available at the moment. They do close soon, so if people are interested, they probably do want to think about apply. I think it's the 23rd of November. But we've got them across both industries, so equestrian, if that's your focus, and then the racing focus, but actually also there's breeding, because the industry is so huge, and I think that's what we often find with our students. They don't actually realise how much scope is in the industry for employment.
Yeah. Well, the principal of Marcus Oldham in your official announcement made the comment that these offer training for people that are interested in pursuing careers right through from coaching and training to horse psychology, dentistry, nutrition, transportation, bloodstock sales, and, of course, racing in general. But it's an opportunity to find the next generation of ambitious and dedicated people.
Yeah, that's right, because I think, you know, the industry in all sectors is crying out for people and good people that are dedicated and want to be in the industry for the long term. And, I mean, I think education can only be a good thing to improve that. And, you know, we do look across the board because we really are a business management college, so those skills are really important to us as well as the equine and practical skills and the more specific vocational skills. But it's across all industries that we are finding that there's just so much need for good people out there, and that's across the world. That's the other great thing. It's such a global industry now.
Mm. So explain a little bit about what the Diploma of Equine Management entails.
So I suppose the easiest way to say it, because I've got my spiel from the stand, so I'm quite versed in that at the moment, it's probably in third. So it's a third business management where you're looking at small business enterprise, cash books, EdExcel, you know, human resource management, all of those things that matter. And then we're looking at a third practical. So we do, you know, weaning, yearling preps and breaking in, the riding if people are interested in that, and the competing and the coaching, but also the thoroughbreds of the stable hand side. If you want a bit of track riding, you can, all of that. And then a third of the equine science, so looking at the exercise physiology, nutrition, breeding, vet lectures, all of that. So within a year, it's pretty full-on year, even though it's a one-year diploma. We are highly timetabled to fit it all in, so we do get a lot done within the year.
Mm. Warren Sutton, who's been a regular guest on this program and does a lot of work with the McEvoy-Mitchell racing team, endorses this particular program very highly. And as he said in his sort of quotes in the official release, was that many people probably think you need family connections or a background with horses to break into the equine industry, which he says is completely untrue. And he feels that this Diploma of Equine Management really opens doors for people that don't have those connections.
Yeah, I think you're right, because sometimes it is about who you know. If you don't know where to start, I think the industry is very open for people. I don't think you have to know people, but it just helps to get you a foot in the door somewhere and to open your eyes. And actually, Luke Wilkinson did an interview for us recently, and he said a really great comment. He was like, Marcus is like the door. I offer you the doorway, and you've got to step through that doorway. And I think that's really nice, because it shows that you've got to have the initiative and the motivation. And our best graduates, and we have graduates all over the world in every industry. Like, I'm often surprised when I find out, I think, oh, my gosh, they went to Marcus. But, you know, you need that motivation. You do need that drive. But we do allow you to, you know, show you what's out there, I suppose, give you the opportunities.
Yeah. So applications for the Marcus Oldham Equine Management Scholarship close on the 23rd of November. So, you know, in less than 7 days' time, what should people do, should they be listening this morning, if they're interested in applying?
Have a look on the website, because all the applications are there if you go to scholarships. And the application process isn't too arduous, even though it's only 7 days. We've just got a few questions. We just want to make sure people are really applying for the scholarship that will suit them, because our sponsors want to see ambassadors that are going to be good ambassadors for the college and for their product and for the industry where they're focused. So, you know, the thoroughbred is for the thoroughbred people, obviously. The breeding is for anyone with a passion for breeding. And then the equestrian is for people wanting to go into sports horse. So definitely look at the website. And I always say to people, please apply. Often people think, oh, I'm not going to get it, I'm not good enough. You don't know what we're looking for. We're looking for potential. We're looking for passion. So don't discount yourself. Apply, and then, you know, if you don't apply, you can't get it. But if you apply, you've got as good a chance as any.
Okay. And what's the age limits on applicants?
So there's no age limit. You just have to be a minimum of 18 years. And, look, industry experience does help. But, you know, if you've got a real passion there, go for it.
Might apply myself, Emmy. You've convinced
me. Please do, Joe. We'd love to have you. Imagine the fun we'd have.
A mature age student.
Joe, I'm your age. We're not mature. We're
wise.
We're ripe, yes.
Emma, fantastic to catch up with you. Marcus Oldham really is a brilliant place for people to go if they want to pursue a career in the horse industry. There's no doubt about that. And these scholarships are fantastic. So we certainly encourage our listeners or connections of to apply and get behind it. Emma, enjoy Adelaide 3-Day.
Excellent. I certainly will. Thanks very much, Joe.
Our next guest on Talking Horses this morning is Magic Millions' Clint Donovan. How are you, Clint?
Going fantastic, thanks.
You've just launched yourself into the ocean for a nice morning swim, I believe.
I did, actually. It's a great way to start the day. It's a beautiful day up here on the Gold Coast. A little bit smoky, but we can't complain about that. And the water's nice and fresh, so I'm alive and well now.
It'd be a bit treacherous, that stretch of surf there.
No, I'm at Burleigh Heads, and it's actually quite safe down my end. What do you mean? It's perfect one day and even more perfect the next up in Queensland on the beach.
Well, you're a great promoter of Queensland, but also, of course, the Magic Millions sales, which launched the catalogue for the Gold Coast sale 2020. Can you believe it's just around the corner? The catalogue launched online this week, and it looks, as usual, like it's going to offer plenty of depth.
Yeah, it's a fantastic catalogue again, and as already mentioned, a big thank you to the Breeders of Australia for entrusting, you know, their best stock with Magic Millions, and a couple of people have likened it to Christmas Day. The catalogue launching during the week and the catalogue arriving in their hands, and if that's the case, then I'm Santa Claus. The elves and I have been out putting this thing together since August with the help of our breeders, so it's really exciting times.
Yeah, the sale starts, of course, on Wednesday, the 8th of January, Clint, book one, of course, and then goes on to book two, which is the 12th of January, and the third book to be announced on the 14th.
Yeah, absolutely. 888 in book one, which is the exact same as last year. We didn't aim at that number. It just so happened to do so. And then a reduced number in book two, the Sunday sale this year, but some sensational horses in that sale as well.
A lot to look forward to, and a lot of first season horses with yearlings in the sale, a lot of anticipation around them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually a record 29 individual first season size, Joe, which is great. And I think, thinking about the quality of the first season size this year, it's really quite incredible, hugely international. It's probably a reflection in the Australian racing industry and the health of the breeding and racing industries, the depth and the quality of the first season size internationally, as well as the local boys like Capitalist leading the charge locally.
Yeah, and the likely highlight lots, there'll be many of them, but are there some particular yearlings that you'll really hang your marketing hat on this year?
Oh, look, it's a little bit dangerous pinpointing the horses, but certainly can pinpoint the stallions they pick themselves, like I'm Invincible, like Redoute's Choice, like Snitzel, like Not a Single Doubt. They're the stallions that will have those million-dollar lots. We were lucky enough to have 11 last year. I think there might be a similar amount again this year, hopefully, fingers crossed. But probably more importantly, last year we sold at $100,000 or less, 250-odd horses, and then you drop down a bracket down to $50,000. We sold over 100 of those. So the sale offers an incredible depth of quality and an incredible depth of opportunity for everybody at all ends of the market.
Yeah, and that's a key point you make there, all ends of the market. You don't have to have $1 million budget to buy a decent horse out of Magic Millions. In fact, a lot of very good performers have been purchased for $100,000 or below, well below.
Absolutely. And I'd say if you looked at the best graduates from the Gold Coast, whether it be as far back as Savabeer or Snitzel or more recently Capitalist, yes, Rubik even, they've all been... I mentioned Capitalist, didn't I? They've all been Winx, that horse in the blue colours, everyone might remember her. They've all been in or around the sale average, so and then particularly year, in most parts under. So you certainly don't need a big budget. There's horses at all ends of the market that come out and make people famous.
An important incentive for buyers too is the fact that they qualify potentially for the big race day in January, which now offers over $10 million in prize money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well in excess of $10 million. There's the women's bonuses that go with it as well for women raced horses, which is really exciting. There's the Gold Coast Race Day. We've also got race days in WA that have the same sort of bonuses and incentives. In Adelaide as well, in Tasmania, and Perth. So the Magic Million Series, all of these horses qualify for all those races around Australia. But as you've quite rightly pointed out, the big day around the South in January is one of Australia's greatest race days, and it's just going from strength to strength.
And this year we're going to, or next year, we're going to see Frankie Dettori riding at the meeting.
We are. Barry Bowditch and I headed up to Europe in July, and we're lucky enough to meet with Frankie, and he's some character, and he will just fit into the Gold Coast. We've all seen him on the TV, and maybe some of us, live racing in Europe and locally down here in Melbourne Cup time. But to have him on the Gold Coast, riding on the beach, he's riding on the race day as well. If anybody like to have the greatest jockey in the world potentially on their horse, then he will be available for riding. So he'll add another element of excitement to the Gold Coast. His own little spin on excitement, which is he's a pretty cool dude.
Yeah, and he's had an extraordinary year, hasn't he, in the Northern Hemisphere, riding so many major race winners and partnering with the champion mare in Able. And oh, that Melbourne Cup continues to elude him. He went so close, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago. He's yet to ride a major race winner in Australia, so perhaps it'll be on your day.
It could be the two-year-old classic winner of 2020.
And if he does, I can only imagine the likely antics after the race.
That's for sure. Hopefully we'd love to see the big Frankie jump and salute on Magic Millions Day, so fingers crossed.
Yeah. Clint, thanks for joining us this morning. We'll check in with you again closer to the sale, which we always meet with a lot of anticipation and excitement.
Thanks, Joe.
Our final guest this morning is Rod Lyons, who is a part owner of the very talented sprinter Nature Strip. How are you, Rod?
I'm very well, thanks, Jay. Yourself?
Great. Congratulations on winning the Group 1 VRC Classic with your horse last weekend. How's the dust settled?
Well, it took a while. It takes a while to come down from a win like that, and I had a number of friends from New Zealand and friends from Sydney, and we celebrated long and hard. It took about Wednesday before I started to come down off the high.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, the journey with horses, but to culminate in winning a Group 1 with this horse who has always shown a lot of talent must be a great highlight in your life and that of your fellow owners. And he's amassed prize money of just under $4 million now.
Look, it's been quite a ride to date, Joe, and in racing, as you would know and everyone else would know, you have your highs and you have your lows, and you've got to really enjoy the highs. And this horse so far has really exceeded our expectations.
How did you come to be involved with Nature Strip? Let's go back to the start with him.
Okay. I was over in Adelaide, over for the Adelaide Carnival, and Robert Smurden was training him at the time, and he had sold the horse, he had syndicated the horse, and one of the people who had bought the horse had committed to pay and buy 85% of the horse. And Robert had the horse, broken it in, and when it came time to pay, there was no payola. So 15% had been sold and paid for. So I knew Robert pretty well, and he approached me in Adelaide and said, look, I've got a horse, I can guarantee you and your mates who have been really good owners to me, he said, you'll get your money back from this horse. I've broken him in, trialled him, he goes terrific. He said, I'll tell you, he's a gilt-edged investment. So we snapped up the balance based on Robert's enthusiasm for the horse, and that's how we got into it.
Gee whiz, what a stroke of luck that was.
Absolutely. We're at lunch. He actually said to a mate of his, he said, look, I'm going to get Rod into this horse. He said, we're going to take him out for, not lunch, it was dinner, take him out for dinner. He said, we'll get a few drinks from him and we'll sell him the horse. And his mate said, well, the easy part is getting a few drinks in him. So that's pretty much how we got into it, Joe.
And now you're having plenty of drinks on the horse.
Now he scores me. I think he's taken about 10 years off my life, and quite a few brain cells have been destroyed through his many victories.
And your fellow owners, the journey for them, no doubt, has been thrilling as well.
Look, we've got a hard core of about five of us. It's three Kiwis and three Aussies that we've been in a number of horses together. So when that proposal was given to me, straight away I got on the phone and said, righto, boys, here's the deal. And they all jumped in, and they're all terrific fellas, you know, all great guys. And we've been in a dozen of odd horses together, so we've got a pretty strong bond there, band of brothers.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to my next question. What has been your strike rate with horses previously?
Joe, we've been very, very lucky. Myself, right over the years, I've had some very, very good horses. Super Elegant, Lucky Secret, Under the Bridge, Under the Louvre, Group 1 winner. And most of those have been with these guys. So I've always been lucky enough to sort of have a city win under the Eiffel, which won on Cup Day, won a Heffernan Stakes. So I've always been pretty lucky to have a good horse bobbing around. And these guys, for the last 5 or 6 years, that's been our hard core. Prior to that, we had a couple of other guys who have gone elsewhere, done other things. But in a nutshell, we've been pretty lucky syndicate.
Yeah, you sure have. And so what's the likely plan with Nature Strip going forward? I know you've spoken with Michael Felgate on his program earlier this week post the carnival, but now that a few more days have gone on and thought processes continue, what are you thinking as far as a potential international campaign goes next year?
Joe, we're still waiting to hear from Chris. I know he's a very busy man, because he was going to come back and give us three or four options, because you can't race everywhere. And the horse is a five-year-old gelding. At this stage, he's as sound as a bell, and he's got a long racing career in front of him. And if what we saw on Saturday is the start of teaching him to totally relax. I mean, he's done that two or three times before and looked absolutely breathtaking, and other times he's over-raced. But the Waller team have worked so hard to get him to relax on the bit, whether that's leading or whether that's is sitting off the pace. So if he's turned the corner there, that would be fantastic. Now, the options for us, there's the Lightning Stakes coming up in February, and there's some terrific races in Sydney, the TJ. There could be a winter program for him, and of course there's Dubai on the horizon. We would love to go, the majority of us would love to go to Royal Ascot. I mean, I've watched Royal Ascot for I don't know how many years. If I've fallen asleep, I've recorded it. I've been to Royal Ascot myself, and I've always thought to myself, wow, wouldn't I love to come back here with a horse and give these pommies something? I've often thought that it's been a dream of mine, so it's not something that I can do on my own. I need to have the group behind us to go there. And to go to Royal Ascot, you do have to walk away from some pretty good races in Australia. So all those things need to be weighed up, and we'll be guided by Chris pretty much what he thinks is the best way to go. But at this stage, I think that we'll get him back, see how he's racing, see if he can recapture that form and maintain that high form, and then plot a definite future, hopefully, as far as I'm concerned, for a trip to Royal Ascot.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, isn't it? No doubt you've been also inspired by the previous success of Australian-trained and owned horses. I mean, so many great memories, the takeover targets of the world and all those fairy tales as well, no doubt, are in your mind.
Absolutely. I think you've just said it. It's a dream. Money's important. Money's always important. But when you get a horse and you get a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to travel him and to race in that carnival, it'd be a dream. It's something I've dreamt about. I've watched that Royal Ascot, as I say, and I've just thought to myself, wow. And having been there and thinking, well, I've got to come back here with a horse, how would you be hop-tailing with some of these sirs and lords and a few Aussie boys and Kiwi boys amongst them? I think they'd know we were there.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd add plenty of colour to the race meeting. So a decision still a little while off, obviously, and Chris will take his time giving thought to that. Any other horses racing at the moment in your name that we should be keeping an eye out for in the meantime?
Well, we've got a horse with Michael Moroney called Iowa Hawkeye, which is racing on Wednesday at Sandown. He won his last start at Bendigo. He's a Lope de Vega horse. Has taken a fair bit of time, and he's racing on Wednesday, and we're hoping the best for him. And the guys, we bought a horse called Ablaze, which is a we bought him as a jumper to get to Warrnambool, because the guys go to Warrnambool as a team, and thought we'd try and buy a horse. So the Kiwi boys were in the pub one day over in New Zealand, and the story's quite confused. I don't really know if they know how they bought it, but we ended up buying it. Kieran Maas got it, and it's had five starts for us over here, and he's won two hurdle races, and we're heading him towards the Jericho Cup. So he's guaranteed a start. He won his last start at Gawler to qualify for the Jericho Cup. So we're all going over to that in 2 weeks' time to watch him in the Jericho Cup. So look forward to that.
Fantastic, Rod. Lovely to catch up with you on the program this morning, and good luck with all the decisions for Nature Strip and that horse on Wednesday. We'll put that in the black book and have something on it.
Go on, you Joe. Keep your fingers crossed. Thank you very much, and it's nice talking to you.
That's Rod Lyons, part owner of Nature Strip, our final guest on Talking Horses this morning. A decision awaits as to whether they campaign the horse at Royal Ascot next year. And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of the show. Hope you enjoyed the content and our special guests this morning. Thanks to them. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.